This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station. The bigger picture on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. Now, it's been a long year and maybe 3 months or 4 months for everyone around the world as we are all battling the COVID-19 pandemic. And for some of us, we might be feeling a little bit like we're just going through the motions, whether it's work, friendships, family life, and we're kind of feeling, well, a little bit blah, perhaps. So according to a sociologist named Corey Keyes, this could be called a languishing, and there are a lot of people feeling this way during this pandemic. So my guest on Zoom with me today is psychotherapist Dr. Suzanne Anderson, joining us from Singapore. And we hope to try to understand, what does this term languishing mean? Why are people feeling this way? And of course, importantly, what can we do about it? How are you today, Dr. Suzanne?
I'm good, and thank you so much for having me.
And if you have any questions for Dr. Suzanne, if you'd like to share your experiences or how you're feeling during this period, you can call us at 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Now, Dr. Suzanne, as I said, you're based in Singapore. You're a psychotherapist, but you're also a trained crisis responder. And I found that really interesting. I was looking at some of the work you've done. You've been involved in providing support during really major crises, like I'm just going to name the 2015 Nepal earthquake for one, and the 2011 Japan tsunami is another example. Now, I know we want to talk about languishing today, but I was interested whether this idea of us collectively going through a shared trauma at this time is something relevant in this pandemic.
Yes, absolutely. And this idea of a shared trauma. Trauma is something that is random. It's arbitrary. It's unexpected. Kind of the difference between the tsunami or the earthquake is that those are sudden events. And so an acute stressor, often after which recovery happens in a relatively short period of time. But this pandemic is what we would call a chronic stressor. It lasts for a very long time. We don't know when we've gotten to the worst. And its impact is how it kind of adds up or stacks up over a long period of time. The consistent aspect also to both of these types of crises is that we have a lack of control over our basic daily lives because they've been so affected by the events.
So even if we may not be directly affected by the pandemic, in the sense that the disease itself may not have hit us directly, we may not, some of us are quite fortunate to not have lost jobs as some other people have. Would it be fair to say that even then we are facing some sort of trauma?
Yeah, I absolutely think that we have. You're right that, you know, for some of us, it's a smaller wave, all the way up to people who feel like they're experiencing tsunami waves. And I guess that would be the death of our loved ones. We've lost freedom. We've lost, and anytime we have losses and accumulated losses, we've lost freedom for moving around and being with people. We've lost human connection. I also want to raise this idea of vicarious trauma. And so, you know, people read the newspaper and they hear about what's happening in Malaysia. They hear what's happening in India. And they feel pained by what they see happening to people, even maybe just in another state within the same country. And so, yes, we have all of those different ways that people can be affected. I'd also like to mention we can have other kinds of crises. So we can have a loved one who gets sick, but now we can't be with them in the hospital. We have a loved one who dies, and we can't go and gather with all of our family and friends. We may have exciting things that happen in life, like marriages and births, and we can't see that new baby for a year or two, or we can't go and be at the wedding and give our child away, so to speak. And so all of those ways that our lives have been changed in a negative way contributed to being a trauma for just about everyone on the planet in some way.
And so this notion of languishing, is that due to the trauma that we're facing?
Yeah, I would absolutely think so. I mean, you can have individuals that are experiencing languishing as a result of something in their own lives. But as a collective experience, a word that is said in one place and understood all around the globe, this would be primarily due to COVID.
All right. So this idea of languishing, and I think for many people, it sort of became, it entered our consciousness with some articles that talked about it. And there was most notably a New York Times article that talked about it. And if you could explain for the benefit of everyone, though, what exactly does languishing mean?
Yeah. So languishing means when we're becoming feeble, or we've become feeble or weak, we're just decreasing in vitality. We may be dispirited. In some ways, we're missing the usual sense of like meaning and purpose and belonging. So in some ways, it's a decrease from what our optimal functioning might be.
And if I were to try and link that to changes in my routine or the way that I'm going through my daily activities, what might that look like?
Yeah, I think two things. The primary thing that we see in the literature is that I am going about my activities, but I don't have the same up and down experiences of emotion. I feel kind of, as you said in the introduction, I feel blah about it. I do think it also means that some things might be slipping through the crack, the unessential things, like people are doing the things that need to be done where there's deadlines or it's really important and there would be things that fell apart if I didn't do it. But some of the unimportant things, and you might laugh at this, but I was just talking with a colleague, you know, I normally have invoices that I follow up on. And I have a certain number of invoices that I know I'm always waiting for. Well, it's about triple right now. And I think that's twofold. One is I'm not following up on them, but the people that I'm working with are also not getting to paying those at the same pace. And I can only put it down to COVID at this point, because I have, you know, 3 years of history of data, kind of like how I work. And I'm just struggling to continue to do that right now.
And this is the main thing that has changed this period.
Yeah.
So we talk about it in the context of work. And I think that's where perhaps it seems most obvious. But what about personal, family life, relationships? Does this idea of languishing manifest in those areas as well?
Yeah, I think it would manifest in all areas of our lives. The reason why I think it shows up at work so much or so prominently is because usually work is the last place that gets affected by things in our personal lives. We're used to having more ups and downs in terms of how we feel in our personal sphere, and we share that with friends and family. Often we come to work and we kind of do the what we call the emotional labor of having the energy, the outgoingness that we need to accomplish our job. And the when the workplace starts to be affected, we would say that people are more affected than when it's just affecting their personal lives.
So I was just wondering, you know, for parents, working parents especially, or really anyone who's juggling double load of work responsibilities and an equally heavy load in terms of domestic responsibilities, it must be so much more challenging. Not just parents with children then, if we're taking care of elderly dependents as well, for instance.
Yes, absolutely. I really believe that the there's two populations, and others might debate with me, but the ones that really stand out in my experience are single people with a lack of connection with other people, and those that have to care for others, whether it's caring for children or it's caring for the elderly. And they may be feeling something more than languishing. You might want to add burnout to what they're experiencing, because they really have had double, triple, quadruple the responsibilities that they would normally have, and lack of kind of the systems that have helped them manage that in other times.
So how does languishing differ from burnout then?
Yeah. So burnout is about being emotionally exhausted, not caring or having like empathy or compassion in the ways that we would ordinarily. And sometimes losing this sense of significance, like it doesn't matter what I do, I can't make things better or I can't get ahead.
All right. Okay. You know, when we come back from the break, let's look a little bit more at understanding, I guess understanding what we're seeing on a daily basis and tying that into this blah feeling and the loss of control that we're all going through. And also importantly, I want to get to, you know, what can we do about it? If we are all experiencing this collectively, how can we look out for each other? What steps can we take to get out of this? I'm speaking to Dr. Suzanne Anderson, psychotherapist, who's based in Singapore. And we're discussing, you know, the notion of languishing, why you've been feeling a bit blah, or perhaps very blah lately, and what we can do about it. You can call 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 01-87-89-8899 if you have any questions or any experiences or feelings that you'd like to share with us. We'll be right back on Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Ik. My guest today is Dr. Suzanne Anderson, a psychotherapist, and we are discussing why we're languishing during this pandemic. Now, that's the idea that, you know, I just feel like the word blah sums it up pretty well. It's relatable for everyone. But as Dr. Suzanne has explained it, it's also you're lacking this, you're just going through the motions. You're lacking the up and down emotions that you would typically experience in carrying out tasks, performing at work, you know, just leading your usual everyday lives. And, you know, I think importantly, when it comes to work and understanding the impact of languishing on work, you find that things start slipping through the cracks. And perhaps you're just, and I think you can correct me if I'm wrong, Suzanne, but I'm losing some sort of interest. You're getting things done, but you're just not feeling that sense of achievement, that sense of passion for what you're doing. Would that characterize it as well?
Absolutely. And it's just lacking the depths. If we take, you know, the normal curves of our emotion, they go up and down. And this is in some ways kind of a more of a flat line. It's not going up and down as much as it was before, if at all.
Yep. So if this is something that, you know, you are experiencing, or if you'd like to ask Dr. Suzanne any questions about what you're going through right now emotionally and psychologically, you can call us at 03-7733-2900 or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. We'd like to hear from you. Is this something that everyone is experiencing? You know, Dr. Suzanne, it's not burnout. Like you said, burnout has a very different impact, has a very different manifestation. But it's also obviously not depression. But if it's not burnout or depression, if we are still getting things done, we're just sort of, you know, at the steady, lacking a bit of depth, just getting through things, what's wrong with it? What's wrong with us feeling that we're languishing?
I guess that somewhere deep inside of us, we know that something's missing. We know that some of the good things that we usually enjoy, the positive feelings that give us energy, are missing. And we feel the gap of that, and we want those things back. And I think it's that contrast that bothers people at the deepest level. We're hardwired for achievement, I guess I would say. In kids, it's about growing up, you know, like, oh, look at how tall I'm getting. I can reach the tap. And for adults, it's usually about resilience and achievement. It's how do we survive? How do we prevail? How do we get ahead? And so when we don't have that, we notice that that is missing.
So is it realistic to expect some sense of achievement during a pandemic when all we're trying to do is get by?
Yeah. Well, I would like to say that it is. And if you don't mind, I'd just like to tell a little bit about my own personal experience of the pandemic, because I'm going to make some very bold statements about what I think can be achieved. And I don't want people to think that I'm sitting here in my comfortable office and haven't lived through my own challenges this year. And I want to mention three of them. One is that my daughter got married and I got to watch over Zoom from Australia. And it was the most difficult thing that I have done, I think, in my entire life. I cried the next week as if somebody in my life had passed away. We also had a family dog that the children have grown up with who was diagnosed with cancer and died in December. And we would have brought the children back to see the dog before he passed away. And then just in the last couple weeks, we've had an 82-year-old patriarch of the family pass away, and we weren't able to go and to be at that funeral. So I say the things that I'm going to say in spite of having lived through those things on my own. But yes, I think that we can prevail. I think that we can live in spite of, but we have to change our expectations. We have to change what we're focusing on in order to find ways to survive and maybe even thrive during this time.
So many of us are experiencing those kinds of losses, if I can call it that.
Yes.
That you related, Dr. Suzanne, not being able to see your child get married or not being with a loved one in crisis. Now, what happens when this persists? What's it doing to our psyche, to our emotional well-being? When, like you said, there's no end in sight to this pandemic and we could be going through more and more of these kinds of losses.
Yeah. And actually, that's why I think it's so important for us to learn the skills of resilience and learn the skills of bouncing back. When this first happened, people would say, hey, it's okay to crawl under the covers. It's okay to just watch Netflix for hours and days on end. And I draw a parallel. It's like we were saying, it's okay to behave in the way that you do when you're going through a bad breakup, right? You have a bad relationship breakup and you crawl under the covers and you disappear. But the reality is that the world around us is still going on. And within a couple of days, we usually peek out and go and join them. When you watch Netflix for hours, stay in bed, eat too much, over a year, 16 months, 2 years, we're creating more problems for ourselves to solve on top of the pandemic. And so we have to find ways to keep ourselves as healthy as possible during this time.
All right. We have a caller on the line who would like to share an experience and ask for some advice. Perhaps we can get this call on. Hi, you have a question for Dr. Suzanne?
Yes, hi. Good afternoon to both of you. So firstly, if you don't mind, I'd like to remain anonymous, if you don't mind, because I wouldn't like my employers to feel that I'm not grateful for the job that I actually have.
Of course.
Yeah, and the thing is, I'm actually one of those guys who liked going to the office. I liked actually interacting face-to-face with my colleagues, you know. I enjoyed my time there, and the thing is, I've been stuck at home now for over a year now. And although, you know, it was forced upon us, you can't really do much about it, But I've actually now gone into this kind of a funk where I don't really feel it anymore. I don't really feel my job anymore. I mean, as you described earlier, I'm just going through the motions. I'm getting it done, but I'm not really proud of what I do anymore. Like, I don't really enjoy what I do anymore, whereas previously I did. You know, so I feel like I'm in this kind of funk, and I don't know how to get out of it, because what we usually used to do is, you know, maybe take a break, go for a holiday and come back refreshed, energized, but we can't do that anymore either. So is there, can you suggest something that, you know, I can do? I mean, I can get my mind off of it for a few hours, like maybe play a video game or two, but that really doesn't help, does it? Because I know I'm going to go back to doing the same thing again. So I'm trying to, I guess I'm trying to hack my own brain, if you can call it that, right? And then, and get back to where I used to be, although I'm still working from home.
All right. Dr. Suzanne, did you have anything you'd like to ask our caller, or shall we just address it on air?
Well, I can address it on air, I think.
All right. Thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
Yes, Dr. Suzanne?
Yes. So that does definitely sound like languishing. And, you know, I think about all the losses that he described, you know, the loss of commuting to work, which is a time that we can think and listen to podcasts and read books, the loss of connecting with people. And I know that we see each other through the computers, but one of the things I've started to say is that our life is very flat. It's as flat as the screen that we're seeing people on. We're walking around in the same space. And so what we need is texture to our lives. And we need predictable texture. Some people have done this by creating zones within the space that they live. And in certain zones, they work. And in certain zones, they do recreation. And in certain zones, they eat. I think three things I would suggest. One is to stay active. Physical activity is super, super important. And I've seen people do marathons in hotel rooms. So being stuck in a small space does not limit us from being physically active. It's harder. Absolutely, it's harder. But it doesn't limit us. We want to focus on some ways that we can be playful and creative. Certainly, Netflix and video games passes time, but it hasn't activated us necessarily in an exciting way. So to be creative, to create something, to learn something, the brain fires when there's something new. So how can we find ways to have access to new things? And then I know it's only the flat screen of socializing, but I do firmly believe that socializing around new and exciting ideas, even through Zoom, can have an effect, a positive effect on our emotional well-being.
So, you know, interestingly, the fact that, like you said, our connections are now through the screen. Mm-hmm. And previously, when we were able to work with others face-to-face, a lot of our friendships was, you know, created at work. Mm-hmm. And now, just from my personal observations, at least, our even interactions with our colleagues have narrowed to purely being about work. We get on an online meeting, we just talk about work, and we don't have the water cooler chats anymore.
Yes. And I was involved with several groups internationally, and one of the best practices that I've seen is that workplaces deliberately create the environment for the water cooler talks that we used to have. In addition to the work meetings. So in some places, they might have a meeting in the morning to set the agenda for the day. And then at 5 o'clock, they all sit down with their coffee or their drink. And there's no agenda. It's just about catching up. And we need to recreate deliberately and intentionally the things that we've lost.
All right. So coming back to our caller, you know, and you've offered some tips to sort of go beyond what he's tried to do for himself. Mm. But what if he or others like him still find it difficult to cope? You know, if if we are not seeing languishing as a clinical diagnosis, but is it still a valid reason to seek professional mental health help, for instance?
Yes, absolutely. We don't have to have a diagnosable disorder to go and seek professional help. And there's varying levels of help. You know, there are crisis lines, there's mental health counselors, there's peer counselors in some communities. But just to talk to another person, often I have worked with a community over 5 years of a crisis that started and got worse and worse and worse and didn't resolve for 5 years. And what I found in working with that community is that each time a new wave came, it's like we forget what we can do and what we've done in the past to keep ourselves healthy, or we need a new variation on it. But it comes back to the same basic categories. It's just that we need new ways. So if we contact somebody for help, they might have some new ideas, some new ways that we can take care of ourselves that we haven't considered. And also having that connection might motivate us a little bit more to give it a try than if we were just figuring it out ourselves.
From your observations, Dr. Suzanne, are some people reluctant to speak up about what they're going through because they think that it will be trivialized, or they feel like, well, I haven't actually lost anybody, you know, why am I making such a fuss?
Yeah, we do minimize what happens to us. We see that people are going through much worse situations. And so we say, I don't have anything to complain about. And then we get more and more used to being kind of in a flat or a distressed environment. And I have always said I should have a sign over the office that says only the courageous come here, because it seems very hard. People have to get very bad or feeling very bad before they will reach out. It's like they get to a place where it's like, okay, I'm willing to do anything, instead of going, well, you know, hey, I could feel worse, but I don't want to. So let me just check this out. Any professional in a helping position like mine should never trivialize or minimize people coming in and saying, hey, I want to feel better. Do you have any ideas on how I can do that?
So does it get more difficult to sort of get ourselves back if we've left it to the point where it's become so bad?
It does. The deeper that it goes, the longer that it goes, what we're doing is literally creating neural pathways in our brain that we're using over and over. And that's what habits are. And so we can create a languishing habit. We can create a depressive habit. And what we want to do is not do it so long, because it's like learning a new language, right? If you learn a new language, you've created all the neural pathways and it's there and accessible. We want to get out of that track and get back onto a healthier track and wear a groove in the healthy track in our ways of thinking and coping.
All right. I'm speaking to psychotherapist Dr. Suzanne Anderson. We're discussing languishing, why some of us have been feeling quite blah during this pandemic. What's the impact of something like this on our emotional and mental well-being, and what we can do about it? We'll go for another quick break, Dr. Suzanne, and when we come back, can we unpack a little bit some of the strategies that you've suggested, skills of resilience, as well as the really practical things that we should be doing at home, you know, creating zones in different zones in your living space, right? I mean, it's one thing to suggest doing it, to think about doing it, but actually doing it when, you're juggling lots of other responsibilities. Mm. I just want to explore what that would look like.
Okay.
Do call us if you have a question for Dr. Suzanne or an experience you'd like to share. 03-77-32-900 or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. We'll be back after this quick break, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. On the show today, I'm joined by psychotherapist Dr. Suzanne Anderson, who's based in Singapore. She's joining me via Zoom, and we are discussing languishing. What does that mean? It's a state of monotony, stagnation that the pandemic seems to have brought on to many of us. Dr. Suzanne, you use terms like going through, or rather, your emotions are sort of on a flat line. You don't get excited about things. You lack depth. You're not excited. You're not upset about things. You're just doing. You're just getting through things. There was an analogy I saw that described it as looking at your life through a foggy windshield, which I thought described it quite aptly as well. So if any of you are experiencing something like that, or if you'd like to share anything or ask any questions, you can call us at 03-7733-2900 or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Now, let's look at what we can do, Dr. Suzanne. And when we had the gentleman calling earlier, you had already offered three ideas or three key things that we can still do in the safety of our homes to provide more texture to our daily routines. You talked about creating separate zones in our living space. Now, that's a challenge. That's a challenge because working from home, for one, has blurred the boundaries between work and personal lives. Mm-hmm. Day has become night. You're answering emails and doing work at all hours. And children's lives, you know, are starting to blend with their parents in terms of managing their homeschooling as well. And I'm sure there are many other examples that everyone's going through. So realistically, what does it look like to create separate zones in our living space, like you said?
Yeah. So I really want to give credit to my son, who just moved into one room within a house. And he had read a book called Atomic Habits by James Clear. And so within his one room that doesn't include his toilet or his kitchen, he's created at least three zones. He's got his sleeping zone, and he has a chair for like reading and recreation. And then he has a desk where he does his studying. But there are other ways that you can create these differences. One is, what clothing are you wearing? Are you wearing your recreational clothing? Are you wearing your work clothing? What kind of sounds are there? Do you put music on when you're in your recreational zone? Do you have a different kind of music? You can light a candle or use some kind of, you know, fragrance that you combine with those different tasks or with one task. So there are different ways that we can create those kind of zones, whether it's spatial or it's sensory in another way.
And that makes a difference, even something as simple as clothing?
Yeah, because it triggers a different feeling, right? Like, why do we want to get in our comfy clothes? Because we can relax. And so we can create texture to our days if we dress up during our work day and we have that feeling of professionalism. And I used to, at the end of my day, because I've been working at home, I would open the door to the room that I was working in and say, I'm home, as opposed to being at work. So there's these little things that can signal us to have texture to our lives.
And you also talked about, finding that space and time to be playful and creative.
Yes.
And I know you said, learning something new as opposed to passive activities like watching Netflix or playing video games, even if that may bring some temporary respite. Now, is there strategy or structure to how much time we devote to one and to the passive activities, for instance, how much time to the creative activities?
Well, you know, what I'm going to suggest is that our personalities, so that we're moving a little bit into self-care. Certainly we want to have, I think that I've heard a statistic that the most effective professionals work basically a 50-hour work week. So that's a little bit over the 40 hours, but it's under the 60 to 70 to 80 hours that some people are doing. So if we say, you know, we have a 50-hour work week and the rest of it is, you know, taking care of ourselves, that's self-care. There's kind of four, we can have personalities of self-care. We can be creative, like we want to create new things. We can have learning, where we want to learn something new. We may be more interested in physical activity. We might be more interested in relaxation. And we can go so far to combine those. Maybe I like to be creative, but I like to be physically active creative. Or I like to be creative, but in a relaxed way. Those might be different activities. One might be sitting and painting and not moving so much. But if I like to be physically active, I might be building something or doing something that requires me to stand up or to move around in some way.
All right. Okay. I guess the relaxation part of me trips me up a bit because I found a lot of self-care tips to be, for lack of a better word, lacking depth. It's about, okay, pamper yourself. But to me, I can't see where it goes. It just seems to end there.
Yeah. So I don't think that pampering oneself is self-care for everybody. I think that going into this deeper place of, you know, do I prefer to learn, like what helps me to feel rejuvenated. It goes a little bit towards like the introvert and the extrovert. The extrovert gets rejuvenated by being with people and having conversation, whereas the introvert gets rejuvenated by being with themselves. So for some people, they would dread going and being pampered. That doesn't give them a sense of energy. But read a new book, go to a museum, learn about something new on the internet or by, you know, reading or researching. That gets them excited and then they feel rejuvenated. So really what we want to do is figure out what takes our energy up. When do we find our energy increasing the most? That's going to be a clue. And for some of us, it may have been a long time since we thought about that. What were the things when we were teenagers or when we were kids that really got us excited? Are there adult versions of that that can help us to be excited now? And it may not be that stereotypical pampering.
Mm. Now, you also talked about the skills of resilience. Now, what are those skills?
Yeah. So the resilience skills are skills that people they found in research that people have that allow them to bounce back. And actually, I'd like to do two things. I'd like to say there's a hardiness lens and there's resilience skills. So the lens of hardiness involves commitment, control, and challenge. So commitment is about what are my values? What's important to me? And I'm going to stay dedicated and committed to those goals, even if I have to adjust the way that I'm focusing on them. And then I want to figure out what I have control over. Okay. And to be realistic, because if we're trying to control things we don't have control over, we're just going to get frustrated. So figure out what we have control over and challenge. We have to recognize that life is full of challenges. Scott Peck says life is difficult. And once we accept that, then we can get through things. When we talk about resilience behaviors, I'm just going to name the categories and then you tell me which ones you're most interested in. But there were kind of eight areas that came up in some of the research. Our physical health abilities, our emotional capacities, spirituality, cognitive, education and experience, social support, self-esteem, and then our own individual personalities. Those are the eight areas.
I mean, I guess perhaps culturally as well, the one of the areas that we struggle to make sense of, to really work through would be anything related to our emotions. I think it's just something that we still are not used to identifying and reflecting on.
So let's talk about why it's so important. In cultures that don't necessarily aren't socialized to talk about emotions, we often feel them in our body. And so I would suggest that movement and activity could be ways of processing, you know, what we're feeling in our body. In contexts in which language is important, what happens is we have the old brain and the new brain. The old brain is the same type of brain that the lizard has or the zebra has. And the new brain is our human brain, the one that can think and compare and plan and contrast. And when we're in our old brain, we're just focusing on fight and flight, like what's going to keep us alive. And when we take our new brain, then we can plan and compare and contrast. So when we name a feeling, when we have this word languishing, it moves us from the old brain to the new brain. And we have many more resources for taking care of ourselves. In fact, if I could just share, I did a talk, and I think you might be aware, for some corporations in Singapore. And in addition to languishing, when I was preparing the languishing, I found that people are calling this, describing the way they feel as a malaise. So just feeling down or sick or not so strong. They're feeling dormant, like maybe they're a bear hibernating. They've talked about lost time, stolen time, and this term fallow space. And fallow space is land that's been prepared for planting, but the seeds aren't in it yet. And when we did an inquiry as to what people were feeling the most, and I did this because I wanted them to move it into a way that they could think about it. The number one thing they felt was that this time was stolen, taken unrightfully from them. And languishing was the second one. Now, languishing, there's a lot more information about and a lot more we can talk about. But moving it from our old brain to our new brain gives us lots of tools to work with things.
All right. Well, that's, I think, a lot to for us to ponder on. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just to wrap up then, we've covered the overview. We've covered sort of looking ahead and sort of trying to structure our days and how we look at our lives right now. But as a first step now, you know, for anyone listening to us right now who has now a bit more of the vocabulary to put a name to what they're going through, what's the first step to take?
The first step? Oh, boy, that's a really good question. I have a hard time narrowing it down to that. I guess it would be about trying to change our focus. And I guess a colleague said, I want to use this time. I don't want to lose it. And I go to Viktor Frankl, who says that, you know, everything can be taken away from us. So Viktor Frankl was a neurologist who lived through the Holocaust. And he said, everything can be taken from us except for one thing, the last of human freedoms. And that's to choose our attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose our own way. And so to me, it's really about taking a focus that says, actually, I can control what I do, how I think about this, how I feel about this, and translate that into my behavior. So for me, it would be changing our focus and how we're thinking about our powerlessness during this time.
All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Suzanne Anderson, psychotherapist. I've been speaking to her. She's been dialing in from Singapore, and we've been discussing the notion of languishing. If you're feeling that way, what you can do about it and to change your focus. That's my key takeaway. Thank you so much. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.